welcome all of you to the sixth season of the Gita and Upanishad class. This is the sixth year we are doing this. And so in the last session we had started the Bhagavad Gita last year with Gita chapter 1, and then we are continuing with chapter 2. Right, so right now I think we are in verse 18 of the chapter 2, Sankhya Yoga chapter. So I mean, before we start that, you know, for people who are, you know, join us new and who want to know what we have covered right till now, I will give you a summary of what we have done, you know, in the last season. That is the chapter 1 and chapter 2, about 18 slokas in chapter 2. So what has happened till now is, in the Mahabharata, when the war has started, right, Gita happens, you know, at the beginning of the war, right? So the war has started. It has gone on for 10 days. Bhishma is dead. I mean, not dead, but he's laying on his deathbed. 10th day, right? So the news that Bhishma is laying on his deathbed has traveled to Hastinapura, to Dhritarashtra in Hastinapura. When he gets the news, Dhritarashtra, he is very surprised that Bhishma is now, you know, mortally injured, and he wants to know how all this happened, right? So that is how the Bhagavad Gita starts. The first verse of the Bhagavad Gita of chapter 1 is the one that Dhritarashtra is talking to Sanjaya. Now Dhritarashtra wants to know through Sanjaya, because Sanjaya has dura darshana, dura shravana, you know, television and telehearing. So he says, you know, since you have that capability, I want to know what all happened till it led to the death of Bhishma. Tell me. So the first verse of Gita, which is Dharma Kshetre, Kurukshetre, Samavetaha, Yuyutsavaha, Bhamakaha, Pandavasyaiva, Kimakurvata, Sanjaya. This is what Dhritarashtra is saying. My people and the Pandu's sons, they are both, you know, they are assembled in Kurukshetra. What happened, Sanjaya? Let me know. This is after 10 days are over. Right? This is not simultaneous live telecast. This is after 10 days are over, right? So now, the Bhagavad Gita starts like that. And the first thing we see encounter in chapter 1 is the first character is the character of Duryodhana. The next few verses of first chapter tells you how, what kind of person Duryodhana is. Now they have assembled in the war. Duryodhana is now looking at the assembled armies of the Pandavas, and then he goes to Dronacharya, and he tells Dronacharya, see, your pupil, who is Dhrishtadyumna, is the one who is the commander-in-chief today. Look how he has assembled their armies, and see, look at our army. And then he goes on, you know, because the character of Duryodhana is such that he does not trust anybody. He does not trust anybody. So what is to, you know, he tells Dronacharya, even though the armies of the Pandavas, it is 7 Akshoinis, and the armies of the Kauravas is 11 Akshoinis. So even though we are greater in number, I don't trust that we are going to win this war, because look at the discipline with which they have assembled. And then he recounts who are the great characters, warriors that are there in the Pandava side, and also on all the warriors who are there, who are actually troublesome. He says, you know, Bhishma is there, Drona is there, but they are not completely fully involved, because they don't support the war. They are there because they have to. So these are there in our side. Look at them, their side. They are so disciplined. They are so arranged. You know, I believe. And then he says a very important verse. Aparyaptam tu tadasmakam balam bhishmabhirakshitam, paryaptam tu etesham balam bhimabhirakshitam. So even though their army is small in number, our army is big in number, I think our army is aparyaptam, inadequate, protected by Bhishma, it is inadequate to win this war. Their army, even though it's small in number, but protected by Bhima, is very adequate to win this war. Then he says, Bhishma meva abhirakshantu. He's telling Drona, always all of you protect Bhishma, because I do not believe that he is even capable of winning the war. Right? So this goes on in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita for another few verses. And then the scene shifts from Duryodhana lamenting like that to Krishna Arjuna's chariot. And then, you know, Arjuna is on a war high. You know, he's very enthusiastic and very confident that, you know, he will win this war. And Krishna is his charioteer. And he says, he tells Krishna, Senayor Ubhayorapi Madhye Ratham Sthapaya Me Achyuta. That verse itself, he says, Ratham Me Sthapaya. That means, O Achyuta, O Krishna, take my chariot over there. Which tells you that, you know, he's treating Krishna like an ordinary chariot. Because of the high, it's not like he disrespects. He's a good friend of Krishna. He's a bhakta of Krishna. But that situation of that war has given him a big high, that now he has lost himself in that greatness, and then he's ordering Krishna, you go and you know, place the chariot in the middle of these two armies. And Krishna, that he is, he could have placed the chariot anywhere, but what he does is he goes and places the chariot in front of the Kurus. That means where Bhishma and Drona are there. He could have taken it where Krishna or where Arjuna could not even see any of his relatives. He didn't do that. He went straight to place where all his relatives are gathered. And then he places the chariot there and he says, okay, look at the people who have come to fight with you. You wanted me to, take you here. I've placed the chariot here. You can take a look. So now, Arjuna, who was so inflated that, you know, about this war, that about the confidence that he had, when he looks at his people, who does he see? He sees Bhishma, he sees Drona, he sees all the friends that he has grown up with, all the people who are like fathers to him, all the people who are like grandfathers to him, you know, his relatives, all of them are gathered on one side in Krishna's place, the chariot there, and he sees that, and all his ego and everything, all his confidence deflates. Suddenly, he comes to the realization, what are we doing? And then he starts asking Krishna, what are we doing? I mean, what is this war for? You know, why would we fight our own kith and kin, our own relatives, for just a piece of kingdom? We should not do that. Even though Kauravas, they do not understand this fact, we know that we should be more intelligent, we should be more responsible and mature. Let us not fight this war. Let them give them whatever they need, and let us not fight this war. What is the use of this war? And then he goes on about social chaos. You know, the people who have assembled, it's 11 Akshohinis plus 7 Akshohinis, 18 Akshohinis of army are all ready to fight, and then it's going to be like one-fifth of the population or something like that, of all the males that have assembled, who are going to kill each other. It's going to lead to social chaos. It's going to lead to all those kinds of stuff. And who will be the cause of it? We. Because we chose to fight this war. Kauravas do not know better. We do. So why don't we take the higher ground, higher moral ground, and say we will not fight the war? And he and Arjuna says, even though if Kauravas come and kill me, I will, without any weapons, just give up. I will not fight this war because I think it is not morally right. I think by waging this war and indulging in this large-scale killing of people, I am going to get more of papa than of any good karma. That means, not only is this a social chaos now, for my future also, since my karma is going to be destroyed, it is bad for my future. So Iha and Para, now and later, they are both destroyed by this decision. So what should I fight for? Now is also not good. Later is also not good. Beyond is also not good. So I don't see any reason why I should fight this war. Right? So this is his Arjuna's explanation. Then he says, at the end of, this is where the end of the first chapter happens, where Arjuna says, I cannot fight. Right? Now, so now what happens? This is the first time Krishna is very patiently listening to all that Arjuna is saying. And then in the second chapter, in the beginning of the second chapter is the first time that he opens his mouth. In the first chapter, he just says, look at all the people who have assembled to, you know, fight with you. That's all that he says in the first chapter. In the second chapter, he opens the mouth first. And he says, see, the first time, he does not explain. He just says, only an important person can talk like this at this juncture. And the beautiful, the verse he says that is, Kutastva kashmalamidam vishamaya samupasthitam anarya jushtam aswargyam akirtikiram arjuna. That means, kashmala. Kashmala means dirt. Where did you get this dirt from? The whole of the thinking process that Arjuna was saying, this is the high moral ground, social chaos, this thing, that thing. Krishna is saying, where did that dirt come from? Right? Anarya jushtam. That means, no honorable people will do this. Right? People who are brave warriors, never will do this. Aswargyam. You say that leaving this war, not waging this war, you'll get a good karma in the next life, or you get a good fruit for the beyond. Let me tell you, it is aswargya. It's not going to get you swarga. In other words, what Krishna is saying is, what you think is going to happen with the war is actually going to happen if the war is not waged. In one word, he says, aswargyam. You think that you're going to take the moral high ground and reach some place beyond. Let me tell you, it's not going to happen. It's aswargya. It's not going to give you that, because it's not the war that is the cause of papa. It is not waging the war that is the cause of papa. He's not explaining anything. He's just telling him. And the only person who could tell Arjuna this, Klaibhyam Masma Gamaha, he says, leave this importance. Arjuna was one of the brave, dreaded warriors of his time. Nobody would dare call him important. And only person who could call him important was Krishna. He could call and survive. Nobody else could have done that. And Krishna is taunting Arjuna to see the depth of his confusion. Arjuna is taunting, you are an important person. You know, if the confusion was very superficial, he would say, no, I will go fight the war. But no, in Arjuna's case, it was a deeper confusion. So even this taunting did not remedy the situation. Arjuna understood the argument of Krishna that yes, social chaos and all that stuff, you know, would not hold the argument. But let me tell you this, at least this holds. Katham bhishma maham sankhe dronam cha madhusudana ishu bihi pratiyotsyami pujarhan arisudana. One simple thing I'm going to ask you, how can I fight Bhishma and Drona in this war, pratiyotsyami, with arrows, how can I fight them who are puja arhan? They're worthy of my respects, worthy of puja, and you're asking me, instead of puja, go and fight with them. How can I do that? And even if we kill them and enjoy the kingdom, it's going to be rudira pradigdan, blood stained, because the guilt will always be there that we killed our relatives, we killed Bhishma, whom we hold in such high respects. We killed Drona, our guru, whom we hold in such high respects. We killed them, and whatever we are enjoying now is going to be completely blood stained. And how can we even enjoy the kingdom by indulging in such remorseless acts? So, and how can we even not think of the beyond, that this is going to accrue for us? So that is the core of my confusion. Tell me how it could be done, because I don't see a way this could be done where I can actually kill them and also be guiltless, remorseless, and not accrue papa. I don't see that there is a way like that. So at this point of time, Arjuna says, I don't see a way that this can happen. He'll throw his weapon and then he will just squat in his chariot and he says, I will not fight this war. I ask you, Krishna, to advise me what is the best course of action. This is in the beginning of the second chapter. Then we saw what Krishna says. Krishna does not tell him, you know, does not tell him straight away, you know, what this is, what it is, this is what you should do. He says, first thing he says, he smiles, right? Prasanniva, he smiles at Arjuna when Arjuna says, you know, you should advise me what to do. He smiles at him and he says, Ashochyan vashochastvam prajnyavadamscha bhashase gatasuna gatasumscha nanushochanti panditaha. That is, he says, you are suffering this sadness for those who are not fit for this worry of yours. Straight away he says, Ashochya, Ashochya means those who are not worthy of your worry. Right? Those who are not worthy of this worry, Ashochyanam Anushochastvam. That means you are worrying, suffering the sadness because of them who are not fit for your worry. Then he says, Prajna Vadamsya Bhashase. You talk as if you are a big, you know, jnani, but you are giving arguments of your own mind without recourse to dharma. It is your own arguments. You are giving your own arguments. Prajna vadamscha bhashase gatasuna gatasumscha nanushochanti panditaha. So then Krishna asks at this point, let us not go to that, you know, why you should fight the war. Let us first handle why you are suffering this sadness. Right? And then he says, is this sadness of yours because of the death or the destruction of the jivas of all those who you are going to fight? Is the dukkha for the destruction of the jivas of Bhishma, Drona, all the enemies that are here? Then Krishna says, no, just like I always existed and I always will exist, the same is with you and these kings of men. You were always there, you will always exist as the jivas. So, if the dukkha or the suffering was for the destruction of the jivas, then that dukkha is not correct, because that doesn't happen. Now, is that dukkha for the destruction of the bodies of Bhishma, Drona and all the others? Krishna says, even that is not right, because this body is changing every second. Right? Dehino asmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara. This body, left to itself, transforms from the body of a child to a body of a yuvaka, you know, a youth, and the body of an old person. And even between, this body is completely changing every day. So, you do not, you know, suffer a worry about this changing body when the body is alive. So what? Why is there the worry or sadness or suffering because of the destruction of the body? Because it always happens. So body is always changing. You did not worry because the body from youth went to old age, and you know. So why worry about something with death, which also happens, which is a part of this body? So the suffering of sadness should not be for the destruction of the body, because destruction of the body is bound to happen. Nobody is going to be eternally, you know, bodily eternal, right? So that is bound to happen. So what else is there? What is the suffering for? Is the suffering for the reason that you will miss talking to, seeing Bhishma, Drona and all the other people that you have grown up with? Is that the cause of the suffering? Krishna says, no, there are so many people who die, who you don't even care for them. You know, whether they are alive or they are dead, doesn't make any difference to you. So it's not even their darshana sparshana that is causing, that is their sight and the sounds, their touch, that is causing this dukkha. And finally he says, what is the real cause? The real cause is, you like somebody, and the somebody who you like, you miss. That will cause you the dukkha. You like Bhishma, you like Drona, you like hearing them, you like their touch, you like their sounds. And when they are not there, you miss that, all of that. That is what the cause of the dukkha is. The cause of the dukkha is what? The liking. Abhimana. Abhimana is the cause of dukkha. It's neither the destruction of the jiva, because jiva is never destroyed, nor is the destruction of the bodies, because body eventually will be destroyed, it always changes. Neither is it for the sights and sounds of people. It is for the liking that suffering happens. It is fine, right? But in this case, personal likes and dislikes are subservient to a higher cause, right? So in this case, your personal likes and dislikes should not drive your decision. It is the higher cause that should drive your decision. And people, and he says, yam hi navyathayantyate purusham purusharshabha samadukkha sukham dhiram saha amrutatvaya kalpate. It is people who have this ability to subserve their personal individual likes and dislikes to a higher cause, who are actually fit for the highest purusharta, which is moksha. So there is a fruit which is even more than swarga, because first time he says aswargyam, as if swarga is the main thing. Then in this verse he says amrutatvam, amrutatvam. So that means he attains the highest goal, that is the goal of moksha. One who can subserve his individual likes and dislikes to the a higher cause. This is what you should do. Right? So these are three threads that Krishna has opened up. One is indestructibility of jiva, soul's indestructibility. Second one is inevitability of the destruction of the body. The body always changes. And the third one is how to handle the abhimana or the attachment and go about in this world and also protect dharma. These are the three threads that he has opened up, which will be the whole of the Gita. Right? So now, he says, now we know suffering is because of that. Let us look at the first thread, that jiva is indestructible. Right? So, and that's what we were studying. We were at this point where Krishna was explaining how and why jiva was indestructible. He says, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, ubhayorapi anto drishtaha anayoho tattvadarshibhi. That means, he says, now the Purusha, that is the Paramatma, is always there. Just like Krishna said, I know I'm always there. So Krishna is always there. Prakriti, of which the body and the universe, everything is made, is always there, but ever changing. Right? Prakriti is ever changing. They're always there, they're ever changing. Now, if you look at Paramatma, avinashi tu tadviddi, yena sarvam idam. You can come sit here. There's my... So, avinashi tu tadviddi, yena sarvam idam tatam, vinasham avyayasya asya nakaschit kartum arhati. So, it says, destructibility itself is four kinds. Right? Destruction of form, destruction of essence, destruction of happiness, dukkha, and apurnata, imperfections. These are, in Sanskrita, when they say nasha, it can mean four things. Nasha means destruction of form. And one of the example I gave you is, when ice becomes water, and water becomes steam, what kind of destruction is? Is it destruction of form or destruction of essence? Right? So essence, which is H2O, is still intact. Right? So what makes water water is H2O. So in ice it's the same thing. In liquid water it's the same thing. In the steam it's the same thing. So that is a change of form, which is destruction of form of ice to the change of form of water, destruction form of water to change of form of steam. Right? But the essence is still there. Right? So that is destruction of form. Destruction of essence means there's, you know, some chemical process where the water is now transformed into something else. Now it's no longer water, it's some, you know, OH instead of H2O, something like that. Then there is a destruction of swarupa, essence is gone. Now it is something else. It's not water. Then dukkha is destruction of happiness. In Sanskrit, nasha means, he is nasha, means he's become nasha, means he's lost his happiness. In everyday language, in Sanskrit, he's destroyed. If you say that person is destroyed, he may not be physically destroyed. When do you say a person is destroyed? In everyday life, that guy is destroyed. When do you say that? Yeah, right? Which is what?
Happiness,
right? So you say, when his happiness is destroyed, we say he is destroyed, right? So nasha also means dukkha, right? Nasha also means imperfection. So these are the four kinds of nashas that are possible. And then what Gita says in this verse is, avinashi tu tadviddi yena sarvamidam tatam vinasham avyasya asya nakaschit kartum arhati. The truly avinashi has no kinds of destruction is Paramatma alone. Right? What about us? Are we avinashi? What kind of destruction do we have? All of us, what kind of destructions we have? Do we have destruction of essence?
No.
No, right? Jiva. Jiva is eternal. That's what Krishna is trying to tell, right? Do we have destruction of form? Do we have dehanasha? Definitely. Of course, right? Dehanasha. Dehanasha is there. We all have Dehanasha. So that Dehanasha is there. Do we have Dukkha?
Of course.
Right? Do we have Apurnata? Imperfection. So, in every sense, we are destructible except one sense. That is indestructibility of essence. Destructibility in everything else. Right? But if you look at an object, this has all kinds of destructibility. I mean, since it is not chit, it doesn't have consciousness, there is no sense of happiness or sadness because it's not conscious. But it has no essence and its form is destructible. You can destroy the form, right? So, non-living things, they have destruction of form, they have destruction of essence. The dukkha doesn't make sense, imperfection doesn't make sense. It's all with us. Our judging is all in all of those, our chit sorupa, right? It's all knowledge. So, the only thing, or the only one, which is truly avinashi, that's why they have used vi. Vi, in Sanskrita, when you say jay, jaya, vijaya, what is the difference between adding vi, prefix? Vijaya means even greater, even comprehensive victory. Jaya means victory. Vijaya means comprehensive victory. Nasha means destruction. Vinasha means destruction in all sense. So avinashi means indestructibility in all senses is tadviddi yena sarvamidam tatam. One who is infinite, omniscient, omnipresent can only be truly indestructible. Nothing else is indestructible. O Arjuna, he says. Okay? So we had finished this last time. This is all. I'm summarizing what we did till now, last year. And so in this, we had started verse 18. And this is where he comes to the jivas now. So what Krishna is picking up here is, I said, the thread where he says, jiva is indestructible. Right? Jiva has no destruction. There's no destruction of essence. This is what Krishna is saying. Now, he's explaining that true indestructibility is only Paramatma. Jiva has destructibility, which is of the body, of our happiness, and of our imperfection. It is there everywhere other than Paramatma. Right? Now, why is Jiva indestructible? So now the next verse, this is verse 18 of chapter 2. Verse 18, chapter 2, this is where we were studying last time. Antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirinaha anashinaha aprameyasya tasmad yuddhasva bharata. So he's saying, antavanta ime deha. Ime deha, all these bodies that we can see. These, ime means these, these body, these. Deha, Deha means bodies. And I was telling you last time, Deha also means body, Sharira also means body, but they don't mean the same thing. Right? Deha Upachaya is the dhatu in Sanskrit. Upachaya means that which grows is Deha. That Shiryate iti Sharira. That which falls down is Sharira. So both mean the body, but the literal meaning of those things are that which is destroyed is body, that which grows is body. So it is identifying those aspects of what this body is. The body grows. In Sanskrita, growth is called Deha. That which grows. Deha means that which grows. Which is also, which is what body is. Sharira means that which is destroyed. It's also body. Different aspects of the same body, using, so they are, even though they are synonyms, they identify two different aspects of the same object they are referring to. Right? So, here he's saying, Antavanta ime deha nityasya ukta sharirinaha anashinaha prameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bharata. So now, why is this jiva indestructible? Why is this essence indestructible? And the reason why he is bringing this up is this. Can you have a essence without a form? That means, we said, what ice becomes water, water becomes steam, and the all of this is H2O, is the essence, we said. Can you have an H2O, which is not a steam, not ice, not water? Right? You cannot. So you are saying, essence is indestructible, form is destructible, but form captures essence. How is it possible? Form is destructible, but essence has to live with the form. How do you say essence is indestructible, eternal, when form is destructible?
It has got no form. The shape will have.
Which one?
That essence.
No, no, but essence, does essence live without a form? Right?
No, it has to live within the
form. Like, you know, taste. The taste is some essence. The taste has to live in banana, or in orange, or in chili. Can you have a taste independent of banana, chili, orange, you know, all those things? Right? Then you are saying, or Krishna is saying, taste is eternal. Banana, chilies are not eternal. How does that work then? If taste is eternal, and none of the things that have taste are eternal, how is taste eternal? No, I'm asking you.
See, once the form is destroyed,
right?
Once the form is destroyed, automatically the essence is also destroyed thereby.
Correct.
And you cannot taste that banana, whatever it is.
Correct. So then how is the jiva nitya? Krishna is saying jiva nitya. But Krishna is also saying jiva has to have a body. Krishna is saying all the bodies will be destroyed. Hmm. If all the bodies will be destroyed, how is jiva nitya?
It's going to come in another form. It's going to come in another body.
Correct. But not until one point of time, right? What is moksha? You're saying if you don't have body, it's moksha. But you're also saying if you don't have body, you will not have soul. Right? Then how is moksha possible without a body? Right?
But isn't the jiva a reflection of?
Okay, a reflection in what? Correct. That's correct. That's what that's what this verse is.
So if you're saying jiva can be totally, so you can't say jiva cannot be destroyed. It's
why?
A reflection of it. So, but the jiva can get the form of a body.
No, correct. I'm saying jiva can get the form in a body or express in a body.
Right.
But can jiva live independent of body? That is not yet proved, right? How?
But can jiva not become part of the Paramatma?
No. Paramatma is he's already said he has no kinds of destruction set aside. Now he's saying, talking about jiva, Krishna is saying jiva is eternal, right? And we also said form is destructible, essence is eternal, but we are also saying essence has to have a form, otherwise We cannot have independent essence. Can we have independent taste without, you know, that which owns or that which has a taste, right? So, if then how does this work? So this is the thing that Krishna is trying to tell here, that yes, see, the Kathopanishad says, Rupam Rupam Pratirupo Babhuva. Every jiva is a reflection of Paramatma. Reflection in the sense, not physical reflection, that what is the property of reflection? Kinchit sadrishyam, similarity, it's similar to source, kint and adhinam, completely dependent on the source. Let us take that example. You have a mirror, you have a source, and you have a reflection in the mirror. You say reflection is eternal. Okay. Then Krishna says, source is eternal. Fine. Krishna says, all mirrors can be destroyed. Now, how can you have a reflection that is eternal and also say at the same time, all the mirrors can be destroyed?
No, source is
never removed. Source is Krishna himself, right? Parabrahman is the source. And in the first verse, he says, Avinashi to Tadviddhi, Yena Sarvamidam Tatam. That means he is Avinashi. There is no possibility of removing him. He is always there. So source is always there. So if the reflection has to be eternal, then the mirror has to be eternal. But Krishna is saying, no, all the mirrors will be destroyed. Right? That's what the first thing. Antavanta ime dehaha. All kinds of bodies will be destroyed. He says all physical bodies are destroyed.
So does jiva have to have a form?
Exactly. There has to be a form. And what is that form? Right? See, truly formless is not there in the Vedic Dharma. Even Paramatma is said to be formless in the sense that he does not have a prakritika body. He doesn't have a body like this, made up of panchabhutas, right? Akasha, Vayu, Agni, Apa, and Prithvi. He does not have a body which is made of this panchabhutas, panchatattvas. But he has a form, and it is said to be jnanananda swarupaha, which we don't know what it means. It means he is of the form of infinite knowledge and infinite bliss. But still, he is said to be swarupa or rupa. He has a jnana ananda rupa. Right?
What you are saying is essence is the most. What I'm understanding it to be is essence is the most elemental thing. It's the most fundamental thing.
It's a fundamental thing.
If you think back to science, then it's like the first law of matter, first law of thermodynamics.
Right.
Matter is neither created nor destroyed, but
right.
It could take on the form
of different forms.
Different forms.
But it has to have a form.
Energy. Yes,
it has right.
to have a form.
Yes,
same
yeah.
with energy.
Correct.
Energy is neither created nor destroyed.
Right. And but it's transformed.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So it's transformed. Again,
yes.
formed. So now the question is there something formless? There is nothing. I mean, we always say, you know, we think, oh, he's Paramatma is Asharira. Asharira, correct. If you actually use the term Sharira as what it literally means, that which is destroyed, he's Asharira because he has no Sharira which is destroyed. Then he is still Shariravan in the sense that he has a form, and that form is nothing of this Panchabhuta constituents. That means the composition of his form is infinite knowledge, infinite bliss. But yes, and yet it's still form, it still has a form. It is not formless. So you need to understand this. When we say Nirvikara Parabrahma, that means we are only referring to what is, you know, in this worldly form. With respect to worldly form, he is Nirvikara. Not absolutely formless. Because he is of the form of infinite knowledge and infinite bliss. Right? In the case of Jiva, what Krishna is saying here is, Anashinaha Prameyasa Tasmad Yuddhasva Bharata. That means he is saying, the Jiva is like the Anashi, which is Parabrahman, who is Anashi, and who is Aprameya. Prama means that which can be limited, is Prama. Aprameya means omnipresent. It is omnipresent, indestructible Paramatma. He is of the same essence as Paramatma, because Paramatma is also knowledge and bliss. But infinite, Jiva is also Sat-Chit Jnana, right? Sat-Chit and Ananda, but in a finite sense. But they are similar essence. So that is what the source and its reflection means. Reflection has similarity with the source. So just like we have similarity with the essence of Parabrahman, we also have that kind of essence, right? That is one. The other thing is adhinatva. Adhinatva means complete dependence on the source. There is no independence at all. Let's come to the next verse, we'll talk about this. So these are two aspects that are the properties of the jiva. And the point that Krishna is trying to say is, do not think that the reflection is eternal because the mirror is eternal, because antavanta ime deha, all of the mirrors will be destroyed. But jiva chaitanya itself is the mirror and the reflection. Right? Because it is chaitana, it's consciousness, it can do these dual things of both being the upadhi, the mirror, and also being the reflection. Right? So this is the connection between... So what Krishna is saying is, the eternality of the jiva does not depend on anything external. Nothing external can determine the eternality of jiva. There's only one thing that determines the eternality of jiva, which is what? The source, right? Paramatma. So, Paramatma is always eternal. So, rest assured, jiva is always eternal, can never be destroyed. Because Paramatma, there's only dependence is on Paramatma, not even on the mirror, because jiva itself is the mirror now. Right? So, these are the two things that he wants to impress in this verse. This is a very important verse.
And the jiva.
Yes.
Jiva will take the form of Paramatma.
No.
Jiva means Paramatma.
No. Jiva means individual soul. That is Jivatma.
Yeah, Jivatma. Yeah. Which form it will take?
Body. Our body. Yeah, all of
after
us.
If the body is destroyed, then what will happen to the jiva?
The jiva will... Even the body itself is three bodies.
Hmm.
One is sthula, physical body. Okay. Sukshma, that is manas, buddhi, ahankara, chitta and all that. And then ajnana. Sukshma sharira is not destroyed. When the body is destroyed, only the sthula body is destroyed. The sukshma, the jiva will have sukshma sharira and go to another body.
Okay. Till then, like...
Till the end.
Like, from one body to another body it enters.
Right.
Okay, once the body is destroyed, the jiva will be liberated.
No. He's not liberated. He still has a body.
Will be...
Manas, buddhi, ahankara. Still there. So as that manas, buddhi, ahankara will be destroyed only in mukti. That means even the final mirror will be destroyed in mukti. Ajnana will go in mukti. Manas, buddhi, ahankara, chitta, everything will go in mukti. Then how will still the jiva be there? Krishna is saying, jiva itself is the mirror. Jiva itself is the swarupa. So and so that is the only thing that his eternality depends on is Paramatma. Paramatma is always eternal, so jiva is always eternal. And therefore, there is nothing, because what this thing is, nainitika karana, that means, is there any special case where the jiva can be destroyed? You know, sometimes we say, oh, this thing can be destroyed, this is all indestructible, but for one exception where it can be destroyed. Right? Krishna is saying, there is no exception. There would have been an exception if you had said, there is a need for a mirror to hold the reflection. Then there, you know, at some special case the mirror will be destroyed, the jiva will be destroyed. Krishna says, jiva itself is a mirror. So, there is no case, no exception, where a jiva can be destroyed. Jiva is truly eternal because Paramatma is always eternal.
So, it's kind of like a recycling. Okay, so the plastic bottle,
right,
has atoms, carbon atoms.
Correct.
So, you don't destroy the atoms, so you throw the bottle away and it gets recycled into something else.
Right.
And carbon atoms are always going to be there.
Right.
So you can't define that based on a plastic bottle because it could take the form of something else.
Correct. So that's the transformation of the form.
Yes.
Right. But in case of the jiva,
always there.
Yeah, even when all the form are destroyed, because jiva himself is a form. And so an essence is also a form.
It's also a form, yes.
Yeah, that's what Krishna is trying to say.
It's the most elemental form.
Elemental form, yes. Essence itself is a form, and that's the most elemental. Yeah. So that's what he's trying to say here. And therefore he says there is no special case where the mirror is destroyed because of some curse of Brahma. Brahma says, oh, let this jiva be destroyed. What happens then? You know, some special case you can think of. No, there's nothing like that. Even if Brahma curses like that, it's not going to happen. Because the eternality of the jiva is dependent on Paramatma's eternality, he's always eternal, and therefore jiva is always eternal, and there is no exception to this at all. He's saying this, right? So, this is what, I think we were in the middle of this verse last time. So, from this, what are the two aspects that come out of this? As jiva is a reflection of Paramatma, that is how jiva is. What are the two things that come out of a reflection? I said the properties of reflection are? There are two properties of reflection.
Similarity and dependence.
So, these two aspects come, right? These are the two aspects. Now, this is a very interesting verse. This verse occurs in Kathopanishad. Krishna has just changed the words of that verse, but yeah, it's still true. Right? What he's saying is, Yaenam vetti hantaram, yaschainam manyate hatam, ubhau tau navijani taha, na ayam hanti na hanyate. Right? And in Kathopanishad, the verse is, Hanta cheyad manyate hantum, hatas cheyad manyate hatam, ubhau tau navijani taha, na ayam hanti na hanyate. That is Kathopanishad. So Krishna has taken the Kathopanishad verse and he's changed it and he's telling Arjuna about that. What he's saying, now, in everyday life, we have to have certain illusions to go about in this world. Right? A truly jnani, without any rules of thumb, will have a lot of difficulty in living in this world. And what are those two? What are those two illusions that we every day live in? And what are the two aspects of that reflection? You said similarity and dependence, right? So, we have similarity in the sense that let's say similarity is eternality of the jiva, right? So, permanence of the jiva. So, the two illusions that are possible with this is what? Illusion of impermanence and illusion of independence. You can have two illusions. That in this everyday world, right? And when I was explaining to you about sattva, rajas, tamas, I said rajas leads to the illusion of control, and tamas leads to illusion of permanence, right? I'm saying now illusion of impermanence, but here it's the two different things you're talking about: illusion of impermanence of the essence. When I said illusion of permanence is permanence of the form, right? It's the same thing. So we have two illusions. What are those? Illusions of permanence. We think things will always be the same. That is illusion of permanence. No? They will all be like this forever. We will all be like this forever. Everything will be like this forever. It is our illusion about this world. Why we have this? Because that is easier for us to handle. Otherwise, if everything is changing, you know, it is very hard to handle that change. So you make everything constant and handle only small change. Right? So that's what we do. We say, everything is permanent. This is like, you know, imagine you have a boat and there's a hole there. Right? So, to fix that hole, we have to focus on that hole, right? And make everything permanent. Everything else is fine. The only problem is with this hole, and you fix this hole. The same thing with our, you know, perceptions and conceptualization of the world. What we do, we keep everything is good, everything is going fine. This something is changed, let me go handle this change. When two or three things change, then it becomes very hard to handle. Right? We can handle one small change. We cannot handle multiple changes. And the world is, you know, always changing. Then how do we handle it? How do we handle it? Prakriti is always chanchala, right? Prakriti is always changing. The world is always changing. How do you do change management?
Illusion.
Right? Illusion of permanence. You assume you ignore, when you assume, you ignore. You don't even think about everything, you know. What is happening there? What is happening there? You don't think about it. Your conscious focus is only on a few things, handful of stuff. Within that, a few changes. You handle that and you say, okay, I will handle this change. And that's how I can be sane. Right? To be sane is to use the mental resources very well. Right? So, that is the illusion of permanence that we have. All of us have that. That's the illusion of permanence. What is the other illusion that we have? As an illusion of independence or illusion of control. Right? So now what is that? Illusion of control, illusion of independence. We all think we did it. Right? And we also give it a very good name. What is the name? Especially in West, they want it. What is the name for... You know, individuality is fine, but there's another thing. Empowerment. You know, you can be your own change master. You are the master of your will. All this. And if you, after British left India, and then if you look at Hindi songs, you know, old Hindi songs, Mera kismat mere haath mein hai, you know, all these dialogues, and you know, think about all the thing. And they'll show Indians, they think stars will influence, this will influence, that will influence, but they will not work. But the real person is the one who thinks he can change the world. And then Kishore Kumar will sing this guy, everybody will sing that. You know? Right? And then what is that thought? That thought is Western thought. Right? What we are actually doing is parroting what Western West has said without thinking and agreeing or disagreeing. Right? There's no reflection and thought there. Simply, you know, they said that. They said Indians are like this. You should be like this. So we all became like that. You know, we're like, oh, Indians are like that. You know, stars will influence. Shani is the cause of sorrow. But I cannot do anything about it. But the real new modern man, Western man, what does he say? No, I don't believe in all those things. I believe that my future is in my hands. Which is okay. But he's contrasting it with the thinking, which is supposed to be Indian thinking. And we have seen this before, right? Where Draupadi is advising Yudhishthira on how karma is, you know, daiva and purushakara, right? What comes from our past and what we can do now. There are two kinds of actions. And I mean, there's complexity in this topic, but we simplify and make ours idiotic, and the modern Western man is superior. Without even thinking about, if it's superior, good. But how it's superior and why it's superior, you have to think about it. You don't think about that. We do this, right? So now Krishna is saying the opposite there. Now either Krishna is talking something which is utterly wrong, or there is something there. He's saying, nobody is truly independent in this world. Right? And if you look at the legal system, if a person has not independently killed somebody, because this verse is talking about killing. Yes, you know, Yaenam Vekti Hantaram. Who thinks of him as the killer? Who thinks of him as the killed? Both of them, they don't know, Krishna is saying. Now, Krishna is saying, nobody can independently kill. Western jurisprudence says, if you do not independently kill, you are not culpable. Right? That's the argument of insanity. Now I took this depressants that made me kill this guy. And I took that, I took this and all this. That's why I killed. I'm basically a good person. If I didn't take any of these things, I'm a good person. But under the influence of something, I did this. And the law accepts that a person is not culpable unless and until he independently has the intent to kill and kills. So now my question to all of you is, has Krishna lost it? When he's saying, yes, yaenam vetti hantaram, yes chainam manyate hatam, ubautau na vijanita na ayam hanti na hanyate. Person who thinks, I killed, he's in an illusion because he has not actually killed. Why do you think Krishna would say that? Why do you think it is correct? If you think it's not correct, why do you think it's not correct? Let me leave jurisprudence. I'll say, if a person kills, and even if the law says he's not culpable, what about his karma? Will he have papa karma or punya karma? Again, that is, even though it's not jurisprudence, it is still, that is the one that tells you whether you have done good or bad. Right? So would a person who killed another person, and Krishna says, has not independently done it at all, nobody independently does it at all, then what would such killing act be?
Depends on the per-person situation.
Exactly, that is there. That's a different aspect. So killing A, killing B, doesn't make sense at all for judgment, unless you give a context. A killed B. B is a committing genocide. A is a soldier. A killed B. Good, punya karma. Right? The opposite. A is committing genocide. B is a good guy. A killed B. Papa karma. So you cannot judge A killed B without a context. Right? You have to judge within a context. Or this guy and all. And intent. Context and intent and purpose. Right? Purpose and this thing. So, but Krishna is not saying that here. Right? Krishna is saying a person who kills is not actually independently killing. So do you agree, do you agree that no independent killing can happen?
Yes.
You all agree then, right?
But can one jiv kill another jiv? You say, I am killing someone, but what's the I?
Okay, what's the I here? Jiva, let's say jiva.
Yeah.
Okay. If jiva didn't kill, who killed then? If you say body, then how did body get the intelligence without jiva? Right? Or you can say jiva with the body killed. Still jiva is culpable, right?
But that's your karma, isn't it?
Correct. No, it's the karma, but did we independently do it or not? Krishna is saying a reflection cannot do anything independently. Reflection will do what source is doing.
No, but what I'm saying, but the jiva cannot be killed, so what are you actually killing? You're just killing
the body. So, the court system will not take the thing, right? So they're punishing you for the destruction of the body, right? So now, your body, or body of A killed the body of B, and the body of A is being given the punishment. But if the body of A can never independently kill the body of B, is the punishment to A justified? That's the question.
But the body of B has to die, right? Has to be killed. I can attack someone, but the person actually dies or actually is killed, it doesn't depend just on that action.
Of course. Why not? I mean, you go and shoot him.
Yeah, but he can still be saved.
Huh?
He can still be saved. Forget
no, that is a different thing. But A can kill B, that's fine. But the thing is, if A cannot independently kill B, is A culpable? Right? That's the question. So now we come to the third thread of karma that Krishna is going to explain in the third chapter and moving forward. And that is, this is a very important illusion for all of us to have. And what is this illusion? This illusion that I do things independently. We all have this illusion. For example, this is the example that I give always. I say, I turn this light on. Right? Now, yeah, I turn this light on, it's fine. But next time I go and I turn it on, the light doesn't come on. Can I say I turned the light on because light didn't come on? Then you say, no, 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 there was no power. So with power, light will come on when I turn the power, light on. So okay, the power is there, and then you go and turn the switch on. The light didn't come on. Why? The switch was broken. So then you say, no, no, the power should be there. The switch should be working. Then the light will come on. I turn the power on. Then everything, switch is working fine, there is power. And then still it doesn't come on. Why? The wire is gone. Right? The wiring is gone. So now you say, I should go and turn the switch. The switch should be working. The power should be there. The connection should be there. Then everything will work. Everything will be fine. Again you go and turn. Doesn't come on. Why? Bulb is gone. So, is I turn the light on true then? Right?
No, we sense the network.
It is a useful illusion, because you cannot think in terms of all of those things. It is complex. Right? You make it very simple and say, I did it. But I was only one small part of a lot of things that came together for that thing to happen. The switch worked. The power was there. The wiring was good. The bulb was good. Nobody called you. Because you might be going towards the switch and somebody called you, or you got a phone call, light didn't come on. Or something happened, hurricane happened, windows broke, you had to run away. You didn't turn the light on. Right? Now I can give you infinite situations where that one small act cannot happen. Right? Krishna says, Panchayatani Karanani Nibodhame. There are five causes to an action. And one of the things is X factor. He says there's an X factor that nobody can control. The X factor is this. Anything can, switch can be good, wiring can be good, bulb can be good, but suddenly, unknown, something happens that you have to run away. You did not turn the light on. You will never know. For all this you can know, oh, I need to have a good bulb, I need to have this thing. Can you account for X factor? Right? Some meteor strike happens. How can you account for that? You cannot. That's an X. There is always in everything an X factor that you cannot account for. Right? That's bound to happen. You cannot do anything about it. You call it acts of God or something, right? In contracts and all that. But it's like that. There's some things you cannot do anything about. So Krishna says, out of the five things, one of them is daiva. That is that which is beyond your control. All the other things are also uncontrolled. But are a part of a partial causes, you know, number of causes coming together for a thing to happen. But what we do conveniently, I did it. And I was reading this story. There's a war elephant, and one ant goes into its ear or somewhere, or trunk or something. And this war elephant is now running towards a fort or a door or something, a door of the fort, goes and smashes the door. Door is open, the soldiers of one side get into the other side, you know, they're all high-fiving and all that. And the ants high-five and they say, we did it. That is exactly what we are doing when we say, we did it. Ant, did ant do anything? It was sitting on the elephant, which elephant did it, right? But we high-fiving, they're high-fiving, oh, that's, we did it.
So
right?
in the course of removing the ant, you know, the elephant must have gone so recklessly. because once the ant enters the trunk, you know, it will be very difficult for the elephant to remove it.
No, let's say the ant was just sitting on top of elephant. And the elephant goes and smashes the door, and the ant high-fives and says, I did it. Right? So, ant will think, it, you know, it is the cause of, you know, the victory of, you know, thing.
Human beings are compared to the ants.
Exactly. What Krishna is saying is, human beings have this very beautiful illusion, which they also call empowerment. Right? Next time you hear empowerment, you know, in management classes and all that, think about this ant. right? And we think, you know, we did it, but there are so many things that come together of which we are just nimitta, we are just one part, and they, you know, it so happened that everything came together, right? So the whole of philosophy of Gita is based on this concept. If we are part of all these chains of actions coming together, then how do we need to be, look at the world? How do we need to act? That is what Krishna tells Arjuna. You can still not have this illusion of empowerment and be, because what West thinks in dualities, right? Yes or no. West thinks you are empowered or you are victimized, right? You are either victimized or you are empowered. Krishna is saying, not being empowered doesn't mean you are victimized. There is, like, you know, you are evite. If there is yes and a no, then there has to be a maybe, right? Because I want to come, but, you know, I don't know. You have to account for a maybe, for a me go and click, right? So West says yes and a no. You either come or you don't come. Krishna says, no, you can come. You may come, you may not come. If you go to Jains have something called a Syatvada, seven types. I come, I don't come, I may come, I may not come, I may not come, you know, like, you know, seven kinds of logic, right? Buddhism has three kinds of logic, yes, no, maybe. Then the Nyaya has two logic, yes and no. West uses two logic. But logic itself can be many kinds, right? Just think of evite. Every time, you know, if somebody says logic can only have two states, then you tell them, oh, yes, you can either say yes or a no, don't click on maybe. Then when they say no and they come home, then tell them, oh, you did it wrong, right? So, as that, it's like that, right? Logic is not just dual logic. There can be many types of logic, right? So, okay, I lost my train of thought. What was I saying? Oh, the illusion. Right, so we all have illusion of independence, and the West calls it empowerment, right? And according to the duality of that logic, you are either empowered or you are victimized. And we think, when we accept the Western characterization of Indians, you know, who do a good job and say, it's all God. And they say, that's a loser and he should take credit for himself. You know? They will teach you, that's not the attitude that you need to have. You should take credit for what you have done. You don't take enough credit. That's the problem with you guys, right? That's what it said. And this we see in the industry and in everywhere, right? People who do not reflect on it, buy it. They think, okay, all Indians, they do not take credit, you know, most of the Indians do not take credit. I should say, this is true, this is not true with English-educated Indians. Now, when I say all Indians, I'm talking about not English-educated. English-educated Indians, we are all, you know, we are all in taste Englishmen, not in color. That's Macaulay's thing that we have adopted, right? So, that's what we accept. But Krishna is saying, you cannot be independent and still be empowered. And still not be victimized. Right? So here Krishna is saying, we have these two kinds of illusion. Illusion of permanence, or illusion of impermanence of the form, or impermanence of the essence, and illusion of control, or illusion of independence. So, ya enam vetti hantaram, means illusion of control. One, A who kills B, and who thinks that I independently killed B, is in an illusion. B who gets killed, ya enam vetti hatam, that means B gets killed, and somebody thinks that B, the B's essence is gone, his whole thing is gone, they are also under illusion, because they don't understand that jiva persists. Right? And also, another thing is, they don't understand that even death is not of our choosing. Two things. It means jiva is not impermanent, jiva cannot be destroyed, and also, even in our death, just like in our birth, we have no choice. Right? So there is no independence even in that. Okay? So, yaenam vekti antaram yaschainam manyate hatam ubhautau navijanitaha na ayam hanti na hanyate. Nobody ever kills independently, nor is getting killed because of permanence. Right? And did you understand the point of independently? Can there be any independent action? Aren't we a product of all of our influences? You can say a person is a very good person, but he was in bad company and he did this. Again, he did this, but you punish not the independence of action, you punish action and intent. There is no independence, there is intent. Right? So that is what is punished. The punishment that law should punish, what Krishna is saying, is not the independence of action or independence of choice, that he made a choice and therefore you are punished for your choice. The law, because there is no independence, there are so many influences that is coming to us, and this is proved even in research, that people make choice, they have been influenced by ads and all. Why do you think ads are there? Because they want to influence you in your choice. Then when you go and buy a Coca-Cola, how are you doing it independently? Happy Meals, yeah.
San Francisco, the city says, don't advertise Happy Meals. It's a city ordinance.
Right, yeah. I think even in Sedona, or something like, yeah, Sedona, they have a different color for McDonald's, and they don't say that or something like that. So, yeah. So, what is punished by law is not independence of action. It is the intent in your dependent action. Right? So, how is this relevant to Arjuna? Because Arjuna is going to commit...
He thinks he's going to do it by himself. He thinks he's going
to... Yeah. Why was he in a high in the beginning of the war? He's thinking, I'm going to kill. Krishna says, you are a nobody. You're not going to do. You will see in the 11th chapter, Vishwarupa Darshana, Krishna will have Vishwarupa Darshana and says, Mahaiva ete niheta purvameva. All of these in my own sankalpa have been killed before. Nimitta matram bhava savyasachin. You are just an instrument. You are just an instrument that is, you know, it's like a person is cutting down a tree with an axe. Can you say axe cut down the tree? No, person cut down the tree. Arjuna is the axe. Think that you are the axe. There is a lot of bigger things that are acting through you and using you as an instrument. When you think that, everything will be fine. Papa karma is not going to...
That's the reason we say, no, like anything we do good.
Yes. Krishna arpanas. Yes. Correct.
Whatever we do, good thing.
Right.
Or whatever we get a good thing. No, that's why. Right. We say,
so good.
Everything will be arpana to Krishna.
Correct.
Krishna.
Yes. So that is the thing. Yeah. Yeah. And that is because of dependence of our action. Right. I think it's almost 12. So we will continue this in the next class. Okay. Vasudeva Sutam. Devam Kamsachanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum Om.